Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 8, and I'm Libya, your host. And this week, we're supposed to have a guest, Malcolm from Las Vegas, but he got pretty sick, and he had to back out at the last moment. And my thoughts are with you. Hope you feel better. But I have to thank Steve for stepping in at the last minute and being our third guest this week. And also first time on TV Campfire Podcast. Welcome, Steve. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Olivia. My name is Steve. I'm here in the Los Angeles area where I work in television. So very happy to get a chance to comment on television as opposed to working behind the scenes so on.
And our second guest, welcome back to the podcast. This is your second podcast.
Yep, Peter Ferris. This is my second. Was I your debut podcast?
Yes, you were the very first podcast.
Oh, there you go. I'm happy to be back.
Thanks, guys. I really do appreciate it. But let's get on down to the news. This week, we have some sad news for sci-fi, guys. Legend of the Seeker, after the second season, has been canceled. So I know neither one of you watch Legend of the Seeker, but I do. And some of my other guests are big fans of Legend of the Seeker, so I'm kind of sad about that. I guess I'm going to actually have to finish reading the books to actually find out what the heck happened. But, the show wasn't, like, the best show ever, but it was fun. It was a fun action, sword fight magic kind of show, and I really enjoyed it for what it was. So I'm kind of sad to see it go. Speaking of cancellations and hopefully not cancellations, Chuck, again, is on the bubble this season. Rumors say that it looks like it's probably coming back because it's actually the highest rated show for NBC on that night, but it hasn't been confirmed. And so the fans are getting together to rally behind it to try to get NBC to definitely renew it. Last season, they did the whole Subway thing where they went to Subway and bought all the Subway sandwiches and made sure people knew that they were fans of Chuck. This year, their plan is to do a flash mob in 4 cities, including Chicago, where tomorrow they're all going to just show up in Buy More uniforms, as close as they can get to Buy More uniforms, which are basically like the little Best Buy outfits. It's little white shirts with the gray ties and little name tags, and they're all going to just pop up in the different cities at the same time. I guess it's pretty much to bring awareness. I'm kind of curious. I'm sad that it's not happening in L.A. because I would totally just love to see it. But hopefully somebody will get some footage of that and we'll get to see it in the other cities. I'm not sure exactly what kind of impact that's going to have, too. I mean, whether the networks will respond to that. Thoughts? No? All right. I'm not really necessarily even talking about the show, but just the concept of doing a flash mob dressed up as characters from Chuck. I just think that's interesting. That's all. The other thing I have is Glee did their big Madonna episode, 2 weeks ago? And I don't know if it's surprising, but it's an interesting phenomena. After the episode, Madonna's records are back on the top of the charts again, which is not, I don't know if it's kind of weird. It shows basically the size of the audience for the show that it's managed to, put Madonna back at the top of the charts, which I think is great because that would encourage other, musicians to want to be on the show and hype their, and basically give Glee license to do almost any song they want. Because if you basically, it's like, if you do your show on Glee, then your record ends up on the top of the charts again, which I think is great. Also, that's news for you, Peter, because I know you're a big fan of Lady Gaga. She has agreed to do an all Glee episode, so she's not going to be on it, but they're going to be able to use most of the songs in her library for a Lady Gaga episode.
Well, I am a fan of the Gaga, but I'm a little concerned that Glee Wednesday?
Tuesday.
We can talk more about this, but I guess my concern that I would want to talk about is I am happy for Madonna and everything, but I'm a little concerned. I don't want Glee to have to become too focused on celebrity artists, I guess. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Right. You want to be about the story and make sure that they use the songs properly.
Right. I mean, of course, I love all the pop songs and everything. I just don't want it to get a little overboard where it becomes so much, like, oh, this is Madonna, all Madonna. So, but happy that her albums are selling. That's cool.
Well, they're going to do an all Lady Gaga for you, and then Madonna has, of course, given them permission to do another all Madonna episode. So we're going to get a second all Madonna one as well. I don't know. I love that. I know you weren't a big fan of the all Madonna episode the first time. I loved it. But anyway, that's in the Glee section, as you say. The last piece of news I have, also kind of for you, Peter, is Oliver Stone has agreed to do a TV pilot called Still Holding, which is supposed to be some new drama about three people that live in Los Angeles and their lives collide and things happen dramatically, I guess. I mean, the description wasn't very clear, and based on the description, I wouldn't have been like, oh, I totally have to do this series, but I'm kind of excited because it's Oliver Stone. That's pretty much it.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm more excited about the whole Walking Dead thing, which is Frank Darabont. I'm a big fan of the graphic novel. Oliver Stone, I mean, he's got some great stuff. Although, I don't know, recently, like, Alexander World Trade Center, that was all right. It's like, I don't know if I really like that stuff.
Well, that might be why he's doing television. So.
Yeah, that might be. Exactly.
All right, let's break it down, go on to the TV shows for this week. First show up is Chuck, which both of you have said you don't watch, but I just wanted to quickly comment that the show's is back after it was on break for about 2 or 3 weeks. And the thing that's interesting about this premiere is that originally the show had been picked up for, I think, like 13 to 15 episodes for its third season, and it got extended. And instead of changing the order and the plan of doing those 15 episodes, they kind of actually had a finale. So they sort of had the season 3 finale already, where they killed the big bad guy and everything happened. So, like, the episode that came on this week is kind of a premiere. It's a weird thing, and it's weird to have that in the middle of the season. But episode 15 pretty much changed everything, and now it's the repercussions of those changes. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Basically, Chuck and Sarah were like, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice my spy career to be with you. And they ran off to be together and kind of had a honeymoon, but they couldn't let the job go and ended up getting involved in a case, because no matter where Chuck goes, he's still the Intersect, so he still flashes on stuff. You know, by the end of the episode, they're pretty much back to being spies, which I like. I mean, because that's kind of the point of the show. You really can't have them run off and be a happy couple because the show's over. I like the new direction that the show is going with adding Morgan and showing that Morgan can really be useful. Yay, Morgan. I'm very happy. On to V. Sorry. V is the next show up. Steve, what do you think?
A lot of sort of went down this episode with the whole, Anna's daughter possibly, betraying her. And at the end, you know, Anna giving that little look like she knows not all is right with her daughter. And then, of course, you know, Val finding out that Ryan's a bee and at the end deciding that even though she's, you know, keeping the baby, that she doesn't want him to be with them. There was a lot to digest in one episode, but it was good this week.
I agree with you on the whole Val thing really quick, just because I don't understand what he was thinking lying to her the whole time. He's been basically lying to her for several episodes. As this alien baby grows in her stomach, there were plenty of opportunities for him to tell her what was going on. But instead, he lies to her, he keeps it a secret, and then he doesn't understand why she's mad at him. And I'm like, he was like, I was just doing it to protect you. I was like, what is she, a kindergartner, that she can't understand anything, that you have to lie? I mean, he almost got her killed because he didn't tell her what's going on. And
that's sort of his MO, too. You know, he's working with, you know, with Erica and Father Jack and everybody for a couple episodes before he even reveals to all of them that he's a bee. It's sort of like, you know, the jig is up, man. We kind of need to all be on the same page at this point.
Right. And especially for a woman that's carrying a baby that's half alien, I think she needs to know. And she, the reason that they're even hunted is because she walked into a V healing center not knowing that that was going to be a problem. So I actually appreciated the fact that she stood up to him and told him that, yeah, I'm going to have your baby, but we're done. So I was like, yay, stand up.
I do wonder what's going to happen, of course, when she has the baby. I'm sort of hoping that what is actually going to happen is that the baby is just going to grow inside her until it's normal human size, and then it's just going to be its skin. But I don't think that's where they're going, but I would enjoy that bit of oddness.
Wow, that's brilliant.
I never saw the original miniseries, what, in the 80s or the 90s or whenever it was. I don't know if you had. So I'm wondering, I've been thinking about this show, and I'm wondering if I missed something, because I've watched every episode, but, you know, a lot tends to happen. And then, now, when the show first started out, and Anna's first addressing the planet, she says, you know, we're here, and we want to offer you our technology, what we want in return is this element that's abundant on Earth. Does she ever say what that is?
She kind of insinuates that it might be water or element. She actually, you're right. I don't believe she has exactly said what it is she wants. I kind of assumed it was water because that's what Earth has in plentiful amounts. But
yeah.
I don't think she expressly has said exactly what it is she wants. She's all about, these are the gifts we're going to give you. We're going to help you heal. We're going to give you this blue energy that takes nothing, and now, you know, you can run all your cars and all your buildings on this energy that you don't have to pay for. It's all free. And I knew as soon as she introduced that energy, I was like, oh, she's doing the whole bit where everyone becomes dependent on her energy, and then she can cut it off at a moment's notice, and then she has all the power. And that's exactly what she said she was doing. And I was like, yep, I can see that coming. And I don't understand why big people who run governments and heads of state have also not gone, huh, maybe we shouldn't depend on her for all our energy. I do like the fact that her daughter, you know, she failed the test last week, which showed that she was feeling some humanity. And then this week she tries to save, what is that kid's name?
Tyler.
Thank you. She tries to save Tyler's life by preventing him from coming up to the ship, because she knows as soon as he comes up to the ship, he's never coming back. And so she actually tries to save him, but of course he doesn't realize that, and he's a complete idiot, but whatever. I do find the daughter really interesting now, because she's kind of got her mother's coldness, but she feels something for Tyler, which is making her a little bit different. Yet she's also, her mother has shown her that she's willing to kill any children of hers who she feels are weak. So her daughter really has to walk that tightrope, you know, and I really think that's very interesting.
I'm looking forward to seeing as things progress, when sort of Joshua might start to, you know, maybe reveal himself a little bit to her, to see if she can be used as an ally to the Fifth Column and that sort of thing. I'm curious of how they're going to bring that about.
Yeah. Oh, the Super Soldier. What did you think of the Super Soldier?
The Super Soldier, I thought, was very cool. It makes me wonder, have we ever seen through the eyes of the other Vs, or was he the only one that we've ever seen through the eyes of? Because I found it interesting. He sort of has, like, predator vision, where it's almost this thermal thing, which makes sense because they're sort of lizard-like, reptilian. And
this is the first time we've seen through their eyes, but I also felt it felt very Terminator, because he was like the soldier that wouldn't stop, and they put bullets in it, and they put an axe through its chest, and he kept, you know, he kept getting up. And I was like, wow, I'm watching an episode of the Terminator.
Yeah, it was sort of like a mix between, you know, Terminator and Predator. I definitely liked how creepy he was, you know, with the first guy gets killed, and then the woman is looking around, and the guy sort of got himself propped up in the corner up near the ceiling. You don't see him the first time he jumps down. It was definitely good.
Yeah.
Action.
I was, because as soon as they do the turn, I was like, oh, he's totally on the ceiling. Yeah, that was good.
Oh, you know what? I did want to bring up sort of a very small gripe with the show. But Anna drives me crazy. Okay. And here's what. Because whenever the Fifth Column does something and they seem to make progress in their, you know, rebellion against her, she gets very, very frustrated sometimes. But other times, she acts like, oh, yeah, well, that was the plan all along. They're falling into my hands. Like, I just want her to decide whether they're actually a thorn in her side or whether she's just playing them completely. It's a little annoying how she keeps going back and forth.
Well, I think initially she was very frustrated because she didn't realize that the Fifth Column were in the numbers that they were in. So there was a lot of frustration in her throwing things. But then once she moved in the direction of building the soldiers and the army, everything that the Fifth Column has done at that point, she's like, okay, since there are multiple numbers, then I'm going to use that and bring them out in the open and use all these different plans. So now I think she is kind of going to plan, that the Fifth Column is pretty much falling into her plan. I think initially she didn't really have a plan. So,
yeah.
I kind of think that's where she's going. Okay, we got to move on. Sorry. Glee. Since your turn, Peter.
Yes.
This week's episode?
I thought this week's Glee, or last week's Glee, I thought that was the best of the three so far. I still don't know if I feel like, ever since they took the break, if the show has really, like, soared for me like it used to. But I would say I do think that the third one... that's been my favorite, probably for two reasons. One, what we kind of talked about before, I didn't feel like the music was tied to, like, a sponsor like Madonna. Like, I thought the music was just what fit the story. And then the other thing is I'm a big fan of is it Kurt? Is that the character's name?
Yes, that's Kurt.
I really like Kurt, so I'm not as big of a fan as of Finn and stuff, so I was happy that we had more stuff with Kurt and... what's the girl's name who Sue wanted to have lose weight?
I'm awful with names, but I know who you're talking about.
Right. Like, I like those two characters, so I was like, oh, that's cool. So now we're focusing on them in this episode. So that, actually, I was really happy about. And I like the whole thing with Kurt's dad and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, I think all three episodes, Jane Lynch has been great. I mean, she hasn't missed a beat. Like, I think her character and the actress just seems really funny and sharp and everything. But I think the main problem I'm having with these three episodes is they're basically having to restart new plot lines because, you know, for anybody who has watched Glee, at the break, they kind of, you know, almost resolved everything, almost in a way that, like, if Glee had never come back, the show would have been kind of complete. So they had to start off new plot threads, like, oh, Rachel's dating this guy, but maybe we can't trust him, and I'm just like, I don't care. Like, stuff like that, I just don't find it as compelling, but overall, the third episode I thought was strong, and I like Kurt, you know, so I'm looking forward to next week's episode.
I really like this week's episode, too. I'd say it's also my favorite. I mean, I definitely like the songs from the Madonna one, but Kurt and Mercedes, thank you, that's her name, they are actually probably my favorite characters. So an episode that's all about them, I think is really, really good because Mercedes is actually the strongest singer of the group, and I really don't understand why they keep giving these songs to the other girl that, of course, I'm not remembering now. And so I really like this episode, and I like the fact that they stood up for themselves because they joined the Cheerios because they were like, you know, Glee Club is not giving us the leads and not letting us sing, so... at least in Cheerios, we get to sing. And I really was happy that they took that stand because I feel like the coach really overlooks them and takes them for granted. So, yeah, I liked it. And I also liked the Finn-Kurt interaction. I like it from Kurt because he obviously has unrequited feelings for Finn. I'm not sure how I feel about Finn's reaction because he's kind of playing it for... they're kind of playing the gay thing for humor because Kurt is just looking terrified. Not Kurt. Finn is just pretty much just looking terrified every time Kurt comes up to him and speaks to him. So I'm not sure how I mean, granted, obviously Finn doesn't really have any feelings for Kurt, but I'm just like, just tell him. Because he obviously knows. So just say it out loud and be done with it instead of just looking terrified every time Kurt comes up to speak to him. You know, so... I find like that's getting a little tired for me. Well, granted, they're in high school and they're not adults, but eh, all right, fine. I just talked myself out of my argument. But I think that what Kurt is going through as far as his initial plan to get them together so he can move into the house with Finn and like play up his crush on Finn ended up turning into a nightmare because his dad bonded with Finn way more than him, because Finn is the masculine macho guy. And just the, you know, the fear and the rejection that's kind of on his face, was, that was really well done. So, yay, I like this episode.
I agree. No, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said. So, yeah, I liked it too. And like I said, I, you know, obviously I'm a fan of the show. And I just, if I could say one more thing, we've talked about this before. I do wonder, though, if ultimately Glee is one of those shows like Ugly Betty or Pushing Daisies, that it has really good production value and it seems really kind of quirky and just kind of, you know, bigger than life. But for some reason, I think those shows only really work for a season or two. I mean, Ugly Betty, I liked. I thought it was really good the first season. The second season was okay. And then eventually it just kind of dropped off for me. And then Pushing Daisies, as I recall, that show got canceled. So I think it's only, that was only a two-season show, right?
And for that show, I loved the first season. And then I, for some reason, I just never tuned into the second, because it felt like the quirkiness and the surprise of the show, I was done with it. I didn't need to see another season.
Right. I mean, I don't know what it is. It's not like the only thing I would say that the three shows have in common is they're very brightly colored. They have these kind of big production qualities about them, but they're, you know, they're tonally, they're different, you know, they're different stories and everything. Well, but yeah, so I don't really know if I think Glee, like, I hope this finishes the season out well, but I'm not, in my head, I'm like, do I really need Glee to keep going, like, for five seasons? Like, I don't know. You know, I mean, if it's good, I guess then I'll be happy.
Well,
know?
I'm actually, I just love the production numbers, so I'm kind of happy. I'm like, as long as they keep giving me good singing and good numbers and good choreography, I almost don't even care about the plot. I just really, I'm like, I almost, well, I don't, the storyline I'm kind of interested in enough to keep watching. But I feel like if the story actually got bad, I would literally just fast forward to just the numbers and be fine.
I know what you're saying. I mean, I guess, but in the Glee episodes that I really liked, like when they, you know, they've got their regional competition, or there's something that Sue's doing that's messing up. Those, what was the one? There's one Glee where didn't Rachel, she's trying to be able to afford, like, so they can pay for something, and like she basically gets them on television for a mattress commercial. And, right, of course, that's terrible. Like, she can't do that. Like, I know what you're saying about the production numbers are why I watch it. But if you have a narrative like that that moves it forward, it just makes it so much more engaging.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to argue that at all. So, like, we got to keep moving, because we've been spending, like, 10 minutes per these things, and we'll never get through anything. Right here, I'm going to put in the rest of the psych interviews that I did last week. I hope you guys are still enjoying the interviews, and I know that the volume is problematic, and we're trying to fix that for hopefully the next interviews. And if you want to see the actual visual interviews, they're over at Wheatonopolis.com. First up is Kirsten Nelson, who plays Chief Vic.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm Olivia with Wheatonopolis.
Olivia.
Libya.
Yes.
With Wheatonopolis, which is a fan-based site based on Joss Wheaton. And you are the slim connection. Hold on.
Oh, my God.
You know the connection, right?
No.
Double Meat Palace.
Okay, wait. I was going to say, yes, you know, from the two episodes.
Yes. There you go. We have our Joss Wheaton connection.
This is like one separation.
That's it.
Nice.
So
nice.
Therefore, we get
nice
to come to this.
Nice pull. No, I love Joss Wheaton. I was just mentioning, another gal was asking, like, what do you want to do for your, like, what kind of episode do you want to do? I'm like, can we just do a musical? Like, if Buffy could just break out into musical, just, like, make sense? I'm like, I would totally do that.
You guys all sing all the time during your psych outs.
We do. Even not psych outs. I'm not giving anything away. James and Dulé, who just, like, they kind of riff on each other. They finish each other's sentences. They're really, really close. And it all kind of started season one when they would start singing. And they would just, I'm like, what do you guys say? It's like, I don't know. We just do it. This is fantastic. So it's a nice place to go to work.
I was trying to think, I don't remember, you have a psych out? I'm trying to remember any, I
yeah,
know
you pull. See if you got one.
I know,
only one.
Only one.
one, and it was an entire group one. It was for a Christmas episode.
Okay.
Maybe it was two.
Well, I know you've done the whole Private Eyes thing, which was great. That's like my favorite commercial ever.
You know, they could have plugged me in by the end of that day. I had that down. I was rocking that bass. Of course, they gave us all instruments that none of us had ever played before. Like, I play keyboard, and Maggie plays guitar, and I think Tim played the bass.
He was playing drums, though.
I know. But they just, this, like, round robin, was like, you don't play this instrument, you play it. I'm like, oh my god, I've never held a bass before. And I keep putting my thumb there, because that's what they told me to put it. But it was a great day to kind of go to work and say, wow, this is our job. It's not bad. It was a very, very fun day. And then the bass player died, like, a couple months ago. So the guy from Hall & Oates.
Oh, I was like, what?
Yeah, not me. No, the real Hall & Oates bass player. And I saw that, I was like, damn, I hope I did him justice. So, but yeah, he wasn't very old.
I was going to ask a question about your actual, you know, your character.
Sometimes you guys just a little bit.
As the show has progressed in the last 4 years, you were very much very serious by the book, but then as you've got exposed to
the antics that are
you have loosened up a little bit with your rules and whatnot. So how do you feel about the character, where that character's going?
I think, yes. Beginning, she was so new at this job, and I think in take a position in any new job, there's a lot of proving yourself and a lot of being very hard on and not, you know, by the book, very structured. And they didn't have good clearance rates, especially in the beginning. Now it comes along to this guy. My bottom line is getting better. And I know he's doing that. And there's a history, there's a relationship there. And the more I see him, the more I have to work with him, the more I see he's giving me these results that I need. Mr. Guster is only an asset. He rarely gets in my way. And I'm kind of glad that he's there for Mr. Spencer. But it is, there's an ease that is coming and stuff like that that I've tried to put forth. Too. He's amusing.
Very, very well done.
But at the end of the day, he can close.
We had a great time
for me. So whether or not I believe he's a psychic.
The whole time.
That's another conversation. But he gives me what I need. So and I there's affection. There's like a, you know, the motherhood thing. All on my kids.
So we got to wrap up. So
thank you. Next up is executive producer of Psych, Steve Franks, and the interviews for Dulé Hill and James Roday are again at Wheatonopolis.com.
Hi,
how's
it
going?
I'm Livia from Wheatonopolis.
Okay, cool.
So we're a fan base site, and we follow all the interesting shows.
Oh,
so
good. I hope you qualify for interesting
shows. Yes, you have joined our family. And
we're so happy to be in anybody's family, yes.
So the first question I have, I'm kind of excited about, because you guys do all the little psych outs where they sing, you do the great commercials, which I thought Private Eyes was fantastic, by the way. Kept rewinding and watching it again. So, the question is, when is the musical episode happening?
It's all on my shoulders now, because we got the okay at Comic-Con from our president of the studio to do a musical episode last year, and I said, alright, I want to write the songs, I want to write the episode. So now we're breaking episodes. We've got about half of the season sort of figured out, and that's like, oh my god, musical, I have to figure it out. So I'm hoping that it's this season. It would be in the back half of this season. The next episode I'm going to direct is episode 11, which shoots in August, I believe. So it would shoot then and probably air in the spring if I can get my act together.
Well, we're very excited. I mean, that's like, because you have a unique cast where everyone can sing, as far as I can tell.
They're all immensely talented. It's like Maggie played bass, you know, at one point, and James is a guitarist, and so we all sort of have a certain degree of musical talent. I mean, Dulé is far more talented than any of us, and he's going to dance with Tim in the first one we're shooting next week. So we have like all this sort of talent that we need to, you know, find a way to utilize, and I guess it's on my shoulders.
Well, since you just said you broke about maybe half the season, can you give us any clues? Anything you can tell us about what's coming up?
We're doing UFOs. We're doing Kung Fu. That's the first one I'm directing in about 3 weeks. And that's really fun, and that's been on my list of, you know, I have dream ideas each year. Last year, the dream ideas I wanted to do were Jaws, and we did a shark episode. I also wanted to do, I've always had the idea that we should do an episode that's playing right now on the screen in there is the Juliet episode, and I always wanted to do an episode that started with a flashback with one of our other cast members and see how their life, and have something from their past come back, and it was really fun. And, you know, it turned out to be the psych version of a romantic comedy, and it was one of the great experiences I've ever had on the show.
It's one of my favorite episodes, too.
So, thank you. It was so much fun to do. So, for me, it's all about wish fulfillment. So, it's like, all right, I did my dinosaur episode, I did my Jaws episode. We had Hitchcock on the board for a while, and that turned into the Yang middle of the trilogy. So, you know, we're doing that, too. So, that's the one that we haven't figured out yet. So we know certain things, but it's like we've built up so much in that episode. It's like, wow, okay, at the end of the season we're gonna have a lot to do. And we're doing Twin Peaks, which is James's baby. You know, we're not gonna do Twin Peaks, but we're gonna do Weird Town and all that stuff. And what we'd like to do. Certainly, there should be some lady carrying a log. There should be some of those elements. It should be something that if you've never seen Twin Peaks, you have no idea what's going on, and it doesn't matter. You still enjoy the episode. But if you've seen Twin Peaks, you're like, oh, my God, how many references are they putting into it? It'll be sort of a labor of love because it was a show that was really important to sort of creatively letting, like, James and myself sort of realize the possibilities of television and how much you can break the boundaries.
As you go forward, do you think you'll do a little more serialized, just a touch? Not like, we're not talking like Lost.
Yeah.
Serialized, but you know, like having some plot points kind of move forward and go forward.
Yeah, we do that. I call them mini arcs, and I like that. I like that a lot. Then the network wants to move an episode front or back, and then it's like, oh my God, well, hold on a second. She's over here in this episode. So you get locked into sort of the sequencing of things. But yeah, we do have mini arcs, and there's some signposts that we really want to hit this year. And, you know, we're a detective show, so most detective shows, it doesn't matter what happened last week. But in our show, there's kind of a lot of character development, you know, when you look at where, you know, where Lassiter started at the beginning of the show, where he is now, and Sean's relationship with Henry. So it's one of those things where we kind of are a little tighter on which episodes have to air when. And I'm shooting the season premiere, and we're shooting it third, and I hope they like it, because there's no way to move anything else in front of it, because something happens in the first episode that is dictated, that dictates what happens in 2 and 3 and 4.
That's great. So. Okay, my only last quibble is where the heck do you guys hide those pineapples? Because I have been very, very frustrated looking for them in every episode, and I swear to God, it's like second season, I could find them. And now this season, I have, during
really?
All of last season, I could not find a pineapple.
Sometimes they're so obvious that it's, I'm like, oh my God. And it usually comes down to the production meeting. And they'll say, okay, we're going to put the pineapple here. The one that was the hardest for me is an episode that I wrote, and I had no call over it, but it was in the Jaws episode.
Right.
I co-wrote it with Tim Meltrigger, and James holds up the sunscreen, and the sunscreen label, the background of the label, is a pineapple. I'm like, who's going to see that?
So you mean, I was actually thinking that every time they show a pineapple, it's a real pineapple. Because
well,
sometimes
no, sometimes, it, you know, like in Bounty Hunters, it was, they were on the pineapple level of the parking garage. There were pineapples there. My favorite one is another episode that I directed. It was Extradition British Columbia, the episode where they went to Canada, and it's in the very last scene where they're walking, they're having like a romantic walk, and there's a balloon animal artist, and on the table, the balloon animal artist has made a pineapple balloon. So it's really cool. And
I have to get better at this.
It's hard, and sometimes, here's the worst thing, is we'll shoot one, and then that scene gets cut out for one reason or not, and it's like, okay, there's no pineapple in this episode. Like, I don't even know where the episode is in Barry Juliet episode. I don't even know where the pineapple is.
That would be my mission. Locate the
pineapple. You know where it is? It's the biscuit lady has the pineapples on her cart. So Lassiter's hiding from. All right, see, I didn't know.
All right, thank you
so
very much.
So thank you so much. And you know what? We feel like we're a show that has grown on support from people like you. And it's really important to us to have us become part of your family, and you know, we're sort of the goodwill of others. We want to latch on to as many people and get the word out on a grassroots way. So I really appreciate you people and the kind of sites that you guys have, and I'm very happy. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
And we're back. Steve, you said you checked out the pilot of Justified. Just give us a really quick, your quick thoughts, because we've been talking about Justified on the podcast, but I'm interested in somebody who just kind of got into it. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I liked it. I didn't get to see the pilot, but I saw the second episode. I like the feel of the show. I love the lead, Timothy Oliphant. I pretty much liked him in everything he's ever been, and I think he has a lot of charisma, and I'm happy to see him in this sort of leading role where he really gets to play to sort of you know, his character and who he is. My only issue with it, and this may just, you know, from seeing one episode, of course, I can't really say this about the whole show. I'm intrigued, and I will be watching more. But my only issue is it feels like a show that I've seen before. I almost feel like maybe that was just because it was an early episode, and sort of they were following a formula to sort of get them out, and then they'll come into their own more. But at this point, I just felt like I'd seen this formula for a show before, and I hope that they sort of make it their own as the show continues, and you know, go away from that formula and become a little more unique as the show goes on.
But you said you're definitely in. As far as watching.
No, I like it though. I'm gonna go back probably today and try to catch up.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to the Thursday comedy block for NBC, and you two guys talk Parks, Recreation, and The Office. Go for it.
Well, if I could say, I'm a big supporter of Parks and Recreation. I thought the first season was okay, but I really thought, you know, speaking of Lady Gaga from Glee, the premiere episode of the second season of Parks and Recreation had a moment where Leslie Knope, Amy Poehler, is at a gay bar and she's singing Lady Gaga. And I actually think that, I don't know if they changed the writers or something, but I think the second season of Parks has been really good. In fact, I actually think it's the most consistent of the Thursday shows. I think that 30 Rock and The Office have better episodes. Like, when 30 Rock is great, it, like, knocks it out of the park. But Parks and Recreation, there's only been maybe three episodes this season that I've been like, ah, they're okay. I thought they've all been good, and I thought this week was really good, especially getting to see Ron Swanson dealing with April, because I think Ron Swanson's a great character, and April, who's his assistant, it was just funny to, like, see more interaction with them. I thought it was a pretty funny episode. What did you think?
I totally agree with you. I think especially on this season being a lot stronger and sort of becoming more of its own show and less of an Office clone. You know, I think the characters are just great, and I'm loving seeing them coming into their own, you know, quirky states. Ron Swanson, of course, is amazing, and Tom, I'm also a big fan of, although he didn't get a lot of screen time in this episode, but it's just overall, I totally agree that it's consistently funny, and I think, and I hope it's going to be around for a while, because I really like what they're doing with it.
Yeah, and I thought this week was good with them, with Ron having to do, was it like 93 meetings, that's what it was, right?
Yeah, something like that, because then they asked Leslie if she would help, and she said, oh, why don't we make it even 100?
Right, we get seven more meetings, we'll make it even 100. But I thought that was really funny. The Office, I'm trying to think, what was The Office? The Office was the woman from the bar comes over, and he can't tell if she's flirting. That was the episode, right?
Yeah, that episode drove me crazy, actually. Just the awkwardness with Michael and him always being, you know, an inch away from kissing this person that's trying to talk to him. It just, the tension was too much for me. I didn't really enjoy it very much at all.
I thought it was okay. I think that, you know, I think The Office is on the flip end of Parks and Recreation, because The Office has been around, I think The Office is the oldest of these four shows, right? I think it's even older than 30 Rock. And, you know, I mean, there's just, I don't know, there's already, you know, Olivia was talking about news earlier. I know that they announced that Steve Carell said on, I don't know if he was on Letterman or something, but he said somewhere that his contract ends, like, he has one more season, and he feels like he's probably done. So I don't really know what that means then, because I'm kind of like, I don't really think you cannot have Michael Scott. You know, like, I don't think the show, and to be honest, maybe that's okay. I mean, like, it had five or six seasons, and it's a great show, but that's all right if it moves on. I mean, if it ends, I think.
Yeah, I sort of feel similar. I think it's done so much at this point, and we've gotten into, you know, Jim and Pam are married now and have a kid and everything, and it's probably okay to at least see the ending at this point.
I agree. I mean, same thing. We're going to 30 Rock. I thought 30 Rock, I thought this episode was okay. Ironically, I think last week when they had the two episodes, I think the two combined were pretty funny. And this one, I was kind of like, I really didn't, and I know Olivia can chime in because she watches 30 Rock also. Honestly, I didn't really think the Peacock thing was that great. Like, it's funny because it's NBC, but, you know, him talking to the Peacock and everything, I was like, it's all right. Like, I didn't really laugh that much. But that's a show where, you know, if Alec Baldwin were to leave, you got no show. Like, because I think originally Alec Baldwin was only brought on almost as a guest star, or he was going to maybe do a season. Like, that was going to be, it's really more Tina Fey's show, but, I mean, that's the show. It's all pretty much Jack Donaghy and Liz, and then the supporting characters. I mean, I don't think you could do, I'm not interested in seeing it if Baldwin were to leave.
Well, I was going to, my mm-hmm. comment was going to be, you can always tell the quality of the episode based on mathematical value of how long Liz Lemon and Jack Donaghy are on screen together. If they are separated for the entire episode, the episode's eh. And that's pretty much what happened this week. I think she had one scene with him at the beginning when she saw, or when he told her about he was going to go and get the turkey, or the, not the turkey, it's
the turkey, peacock.
She told him he was going to go get it. And then that's like 5 seconds, and then he comes back and she get the peacock, like, touches her face and marks her, and that's literally the only scenes that they have together.
Although that was pretty funny when they did the great cut where she's looking at the peacock, and then they do a close up of her, and it zooms out, and the peacock's on the other side of the couch. How the hell did it move that? Like, that was pretty funny. I thought that was good.
Yeah, I mean, all that was because, of course, they're in the same scene together. Anytime right. they're in a scene together, the show's fantastic. When they split them up and try to give them totally separate plot lines, I find that I lose my interest. And that was pretty much the case this week. Because I think Liz was... What the heck was Liz doing this week? She was juggling like 5 different things, different crises or something. Stuff that was... Oh, the weddings. There were all the weddings. That's what it was. Because she ended up being involved in
right.
3
yeah,
weddings,
yeah.
And she ends up having to be in 3 weddings the same day. And I was kind of like, yeah, good luck with that.
Right.
But
yeah,
it was okay. You're right. It was just an okay episode. It wasn't great.
Yeah, I didn't really care for the whole best man plot line. I didn't think, for some reason, it was almost like Tracy became the same character in this episode. Everybody else was crazy, and Tracy was sort of the straight guy, and I love him being out, you know, with his brain floating around the cosmos, so I need a little more weird Tracy Jordan action in my 30 Rock episode.
That's an interesting concept of Tracy being sane. Yeah, that's never good. That means you've gone too
exactly.
insane. If he's on the side of sanity, then you've totally gone off the rails. But
exactly.
I want to move on real quick. Fringe was a very musical episode this week. And I know Peter normally watches Fringe, but I blame myself for why he did not watch this week, because I saw it first and told him my opinion, and then he didn't watch it. So, totally my fault. Their attempt at doing a musical, I personally think, was pretty ill-conceived, because the first time I heard it, I was like, Fringe is doing a musical? Really? And then once I actually saw the preview, I was like, I don't know. And then when it actually aired, I was like, I was really hoping it was good. And for the first half of the episode, I was kind of like, okay. But it really didn't go anywhere. It was, the entire concept was that Walter was very upset that Peter, you know, found out the truth and left. He found, you know, he's like, you're not my father. And it's basically a story that Walter tells while he's high, because he's made up some new formula for his weed. So he's super, super high and is telling a story to Olivia's niece. And he pretty much uses all the names of the characters that are in the show, and just tweaks the story a little bit, and pretty much retells what we already know. So there's no new information. We find out that Walter has his heart broken. We knew that already. And if you're going to do a musical, I mean, you have Buffy, which had the best one of the best musicals. You had Scrubs, which had a really good musical. And Fringe just, it felt like they were like, oh, we should do a musical too, and had no concept of how to do it. And then my other argument, problem is, okay, you've got Broyles, who I did not know can sing. Well, the actor, I mean. I did not know he can sing, yet he can. He can sing very well, and I think he was actually the best use of trying to get somebody to sing. So he got to just kind of be hanging out at the crime scene, and he sang a song, and his voice is really good. I was very surprised. And also, we find out that Astrid can sing really well, and she wasn't used hardly at all. Like, I'm like, she's the best singer you have, and you don't give her a song? The only thing she sings is she's trying to do an interview, and she's like, please give me the job. And she has like three lines, and then she's done. And they gave a song to Olivia, which didn't work because she can't sing. And Walter, I think he can sing, but he was kind of trying not to sing because he was high and everything. It just frustrated me, mainly because the story was over the top. And it boiled down to Walter had his heart broken because Peter left. And in the story he tells, Peter literally steals the heart out of his chest because it's an artificial heart. And the entire story is about whether or not Peter should give Walter his heart back. And I'm like, really? This is your musical? It does nothing. It advances nothing because it's all in Walter's imagination. I mean, he tells people the story, but it's still everything that happens in the musical is in Walter's head, his imagination. And it all takes place in maybe an hour or two because Olivia drops off her niece, goes and runs an errand. She's like, I haven't been able to find Peter at the beginning of the story. She comes back from her errand at the end of the story, and she's like, I haven't been able to find Peter. The most interesting thing that happens is at the very end, one of the observers is watching the house and sees that Peter's gone and uses his multi-dimensional cell phone and calls, you know, home base or whatever and says that Peter's missing, he hasn't come back. Yes, we know how important he is. The end. That's all we got. So I felt like it was a waste of an hour of my time. So, of course, since I told Peter that, he didn't watch the episode. So it made the discussion a little one-sided. And if you totally agree and think that the musical is the best episode ever, please let us know. I try not to be super negative, but if you don't earn it, I'm not going to say that your show is great. I feel like you have to, you know, show some ability and separate yourself from, you know, the mediocre to get a good review. The next show we're going to talk about, we were going to talk about Supernatural, but strangely, I have two people who are guests on the show who don't watch Supernatural, which I'll try not to let that happen again.
I will start in June. Yeah. It comes on Blu-ray, I'll start watching it.
Thank you. Catch up.
I don't even know what that show is.
It's called Supernatural. It's on CW on Thursdays. Do not start watching it now because it's at the end of a 5-year arc and you will be very, very confused. And there's only 2 episodes left.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't watch a lot of shows on the CW as a rule, but, you know, maybe I'll check it out when it gets on DVD or whatever.
It is on DVD and it's in season 5. And I would agree with you, that is the only show I watch on the CW. It's very, very good. All right,
Gossip Girl.
Okay, Peter likes Gossip Girl. The next show we're going to talk about is Stargate Universe. Steve is this is the show that actually brought Steve to the podcast, and he says he has lots to say, so go forth and say.
Oh, man, with that introduction, how could I not? You know, I need to address Stargate Universe directly, and maybe their writers or someone is listening, or will be listening. Stop leaving people behind. Seriously, you're killing me. It's become a plot point in 3 different episodes now. It shouldn't be the point of the show that, like, hey, every time we stop and go to a planet, we're going to leave someone behind for an episode. It's driving me completely insane, you know? They need to stick to the overall plot and the overall goal of the character, which is, you know, with the exception of Dr. Rush, we need to get home. We need to figure out a way to get home. And I feel like they're muddying that whole plot line by every week making it, okay, we need to go back to the ship. Like, just leave them on the dang ship and have them work on surviving and then trying to get home eventually. Like, it's killing me. You know, I need something different to happen one episode.
One thing I want to say with that is what you also haven't mentioned in the whole they keep leaving people behind aspect is if this show was like Battlestar Galactica where they kill people, then the tension of them leaving people behind would be interesting. But because they've shown so far they're not willing to kill anybody, then them leaving people behind is very, you don't care. You're like, all right, well, they're going to find them in like a week or two, so who cares?
Exactly. You know they're going to get back. It's like, you know, the season finale last season or mini season or whatever it was, they leave Rush on the planet, and I thought that was amazing. Of course, that was the first time they had done it. But then the first episode of the new season's like, oh, and he's back already. I really wanted them to sort of try to make us forget about that for a couple episodes and then bring it back. And I just feel like they're doing that exact, plot too many times in a row. And I totally agree with because they're unwilling to kill anybody off. It's like, you know they're going to get back. It's Eli, and it's Scott, and it's Chloe, or whatever her name is. The main characters of the show. No one's going to die. They're going to be back.
Right, exactly. So there's absolutely no tension. I actually thought they might have killed Greer if the episode hadn't... Well, actually, because the episode was a flashback to his childhood, and they were giving us all this personal information, I was like, oh, is he going to die? You know, like, there was actually a little tension that they might have killed Greer, and he's the first one they rescue. So I was like, all right, they're not killing anybody on this show.
Yeah, I know. They almost had me when the rocks came down on Greer. I said, did they really just kill off Greer? I'm actually going to be sad with the main character, and then, you know, no, they didn't.
So this was the only thing that actually was interesting that happened was the soap opera storyline where TJ tells Young, you know, she's pregnant. And I actually liked how she told him because she'd been avoiding it for weeks and she'd been trying to, you know, stepping around it and doing all that. And then she's just like, he walked into the room. I'm pregnant. So I'm kind of excited to see where that goes. And I know it is a total soap opera storyline, but I actually don't care because right now it's kind of interesting.
I think it will be interesting once, you know, she's farther along and then we come to the point where she's going to have to deliver the baby and what they're going to have to use a communication stone and have a doctor go into someone else's body because she's the doctor.
Yeah, that I did think about that.
She's a medical doctor. It's like on, you know, another show which will not be named that has a lead character as a doctor. If he gets injured, he has to have a non-doctor fix him up.
Wait a minute. Have they used the stone since they ran into those aliens? I think they stopped because they were afraid that they were going to switch bodies with the aliens. So they haven't used the stones since then, right?
Yeah, I was wondering about that this episode, but I think they got the stone back because Rush killed the alien that had the stone after Young jumped into his body and freed him, and then they jumped back out. Rush killed that alien, and I think he took the stone with him. So.
Oh, but you know what? I just remembered they brought in a surgeon to remove the tracking device from Rush. So the stones are working.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Yeah, so they just didn't really use them last episode at all, for whatever reason.
Right. Well, I actually like the construct of using the communication stones, mainly because then you can bring in outside characters versus you have your closed in, you know, everybody who's closed in on the ship. And then you can also bring in guest stars or whatnot using the communication stones. I think that's a really good concept. But, yeah, Stargate Universe needs to step it up.
Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic show. I really like how sort of much darker it is than SG-1. You know, I like that as soon as they start killing off main characters, it'll feel a lot darker. But right now it feels like it should be darker. But we'll see what happens if anybody actually...
They kind of advertise themselves as, like, the Battlestar Galactica of the Stargate universe, and I liked what they were doing at the beginning, and I really believed that that's what they were doing until they came to a couple of places where they could have killed people, and it looked like they were going to kill people, and then they pull back. And I think that you can't do that. If you're going to claim that your show is dark, you at least can kill side characters. Please, just kill somebody. I don't care who.
Yeah.
I don't care. They've introduced all the... There's like 15 side scientists and side characters that we've seen and talked to and gotten to know a little bit. Kill them.
Yeah, I mean, they killed Chew McGavin, but that was about it.
That was in the pilot. Doesn't count.
Exactly. I'm like, I when I saw the guy on screen, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be on the show. No, no, he's not.
That should have been the clue. All right. Have a final comment about Stargate Universe?
Well, my only final comment is that I'm glad that they've started going back to the flashback so that we can get to know these characters a little better, because with them all stuck on the same ship, there's not a lot that they can do to show who they are, because they're sort of all in the same situation. And there's only so many actions they can take in reacting to the situation. So I like that we've brought back the flashbacks. What I would like to see, which kind of harkens back to our conversation about the communication stones, is to play up this drama of, like, you can talk to the people back on Earth, but you can't get back there. Because I thought that was some really strong drama when we had, like, Chloe going back to visit her mom and not being able to reveal even that it was her and everything, and sort of the drama that ensued with that whole, like, you can see these people and you can talk to them, but you're not actually home. I think that's an interesting comment that I would like to see played up a little more often.
Okay. I agree. I like that, except for I thought the young thing with his ex-wife, I liked it at the beginning, but then, what's his name, ruined it. What is that man's name?
Yeah. Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yes. Lou Diamond Phillips totally ruined that storyline for me. I just wanted him dead at that point.
I agree. Yeah, that was the one exception that I'm just like, yeah, I could never see him go back and visit again, and I would be fine with that.
Yes. All right, we're going to talk about Doctor Who, but of course we are technically on the BBC America feed, so this week's episode is Victory of the Daleks.
I was just actually, yesterday I was talking to a friend of mine, and Libby, you should have been there. It's just my friend Andrew, and he's a big BBC guy just like you, and he's been... I guess he's been listening to these BBC radio things where they've been interviewing, I think, one of the first creators or producers of Doctor Who, like from the 50s or 60s or something like that. And he was talking about, like, the groundwork of, like, why they decided the Doctor always needed a companion and all these kind of things. And I said, you know, to be quite frank, you know, what I haven't really watched a lot of old Doctor Who. I saw Tom Baker a little when I was a kid, but I don't really remember it. I remember the guy had a big scarf and the hat, you know. But I've been watching Doctor Who since Christopher Eccleston, so I guess that's maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And me and Livia, I think we both agree that while, yes, the TARDIS and the companion and the music when the show starts, dun 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 dun, all that stuff's awesome. However, I'm really tired of, and this will lead to this episode, I'm tired of Moffat and used to be Russell T. Davies relying too much on old villains of Doctor Who. It's okay for the Master because, one, it was a good actor, and two, he's kind of an interesting personality, but the Daleks, which is what this episode was, you know, they're just, I just don't think they're very interesting. I think that their design's okay and their exterminate is kind of funny, but really, I can't believe we've gone through 4 or 5 seasons of this new Doctor Who, and how many times have the Daleks been on? Like, every season? Sometimes more than one season? Am I right?
That is, every single season has had at least one episode with the Daleks, if not more. And season 5 so far has had one, but with a very big hint that we're going to see more. And so people are pretty split on the whole iPod look of the new Daleks, where they're all multicolored. My thing is, I saw them and I started groaning. I mean, you said you liked them, but I groaned because my first thought is they're selling toys and you have to collect them all. You have to get all the colors. And I'm like, I'm totally not interested in collecting Dalek toys, so why are you making them goofy multicolors?
So. Oh, I didn't think of that. I mean, although as a counter to what you're saying, and honestly, I don't really care one way or the other, but I mean, as you and I have discussed before, in talking about survivors, Doctor Who is a very popular show. It's like probably the most popular show in Britain, and it's a show for all ages. So actually, that's not necessarily that out of range that they would think of making toys for Doctor Who. And to be honest, I don't mind. I mean, there are worse things that little kids could be having toys of, so I'm not against Doctor Who toys. I mean, like, that's okay.
Well, I'm not against the toys. I'm against them putting stuff in the plot to sell toys. That's my issue. I felt like the whole design of the new Daleks was based on a toy. Like, they came up with the toy first, and then they came up with it in the episode. That's what I felt like.
I see what you're saying. I didn't even think of the iPod thing until you mentioned it, and I was like, oh, I can kind of see that. But it's funny. You're thinking of it from the marketing point of view. I'm thinking of it from the point of view is, wait a minute, if we have new-looking Daleks, that means we have to see them again another episode. That was my fear.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they insinuated. I mean, obviously we're going to see those Daleks again, and I'm just groaning because I am sick and tired of Daleks. I'm sick and tired of Cybermen. I am very excited that next week's episode is with the Weeping Angels. So that's a monster we've only seen one time before, and they had a very good showing. So
fantastic.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and didn't Moffat create the Weeping Angels?
Exactly. It's a brand new monster, and that's my thing, is the Doctor doesn't have to run into the same monsters over and over again. Give us new monsters.
Right.
It's okay. And so the third episode to me was the weakest of the three that we've seen so far. I really love the pilot. I thought The Beast Below was pretty good. I mean, I had a couple problems with the Doctor, his anger management issues. But on the whole, I thought The Beast Below was a pretty good episode. I think that Victory of the Daleks, because I'm so tired of them, it already got a minus whatever. And the guy who played Churchill, he was okay. I thought that the robot scientist was an interesting reveal, because I was kind of confused. I was like, well, how can this guy think that he created the Daleks and be absolutely sure that he created them? And at first I was like, is he lying? What's going on with him? And then they reveal that he was actually created by the Daleks. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I think that was one of the best things.
I think you're right. That's probably the best part of the episode. I agree with you.
And then the Doctor's rage at the Daleks. I always love when the Doctor rages at the Daleks. That's the only thing I have to look forward to. When they show up again, he's usually very upset and wants to kill them irrationally. And he did not disappoint this week. He got very, very angry and started beating it with a wrench. It's great. But other than that, I don't think this episode added much. Oh, we got the big clue, though, at the end of the episode that Amy doesn't know who the Daleks are. And
oh, right.
So the Doctor's like, okay, something's wrong. Something's going on that looks like it's connected to the main overall plot of the season.
Yeah, and that I'm very interested in, the whole crack thing. I think you and I are total agreements. I think I would give the first episode an A, second episode like a B, and then this one was kind of like a C, which is, you know, gotten me nervous, because I'm like, huh, that's not good. You know, like, it started with a bang, and now I'm going, where's this going?
So the preview for next week looks very, very exciting. We get River Song, and we get Weeping Angels. So I'm totally looking forward to that discussion next week. The last thing we wanted to talk about is a show you mentioned briefly, which is a BBC show called Survivors. And that show, it aired on BBC, season one aired last year on BBC, and then this year also on BBC in the UK, but BBC America has been airing, it aired season one and season two back to back. So if you were fortunate enough to have BBC America, you could kind of watch them all together. I will not mention the order in which I watched them, but me and Peter have both watched all of season one, correct?
Correct. I've seen season one and the premiere of season two. You are way ahead of me, I think.
I'm not exactly way, well, I am actually. I think I only have two episodes left of season two.
People should know there are only six episodes a season.
Right. So it's not like there's 22 episodes. Right. For someone who's never seen Survivors, what do you think? What do you think of the show as far as whether you should watch it? What's good? What's bad?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's really good. My biggest issue is, and you and I have talked about this once again off the grid. I'm a huge fan of The Walking Dead, and that is being. I'm very excited that AMC with Frank Darabont, who made The Mist and Shawshank Redemption and Stephen King stuff, that they're doing the Walking Dead graphic novel into a television show, and Survivors to me is an interesting. I'm hoping that they've seen the BBC Survivors, because while I don't think the show's perfect, I think what the show does really well is, I mean, for anybody who doesn't even know what it's about at all, it's basically a post-apocalyptic. You know, there's a virus. Looks like less than 1% of the population is alive. There aren't any zombies. There's no specific monsters. You know, the monsters are man or whatever. But, I mean, it's really more if society broke down and there weren't a lot of people around, obviously you're not really going to have electricity. There's no more cell phones. How would you survive? And I think the show does a really good job of that. I mean, I don't know, like, London really well or Europe and stuff, so I don't really know with the way they shoot it, but it looks to me very, very, very real. Like, I really get the feeling like this environment is not, like, destroyed, like, you know, Fallout 3 or, like, Road Warrior or something, but it's still very much, like, just very empty and, like, desolate, and people are very desperate. What I don't like about Survivors, and Libya is much more of a BBC Anglophile than I am, but I sometimes feel like the world is so desperate that I feel like Survivors, I think, is a show made for adults, whereas Doctor Who, I think, is made for everybody. So when I watch Doctor Who, I don't expect it to be super violent, because it's a kid, you know, it's for little kids and up. When I watch Survivors, kind of like Torchwood, I kind of feel like they're not thinking kids are watching this. And there's a lot of times on Survivors where I do feel like people, kind of like what you guys are just talking about Stargate Universe, where people don't get killed as often as I think they would, where I'm like, really? Why wouldn't this person just shoot this person? The tone of the show feels like there should be more death. I mean, I don't necessarily need gore, but there should be more the possibility that people can get killed.
I actually do agree with you somewhat. Because especially in the premiere of season 2, where they look like they kill the main character, I was like, oh, they killed him. And I mean, literally, they really made it look like they killed him. They had him buried under a ton of the building collapses. He's bleeding. He starts to suffocate, and we kind of see him stop breathing. And so you're going, oh, he's dead. And then some kind of way he survives. And they don't actually explain how he went from not breathing to being alive when they pulled him out of the wreckage. That I actually felt was cheap. I did feel like if you're going to kill a character, kill him, or don't tease it that you're killing him. You know, either do it or don't do it. I did, however, like the fact that, well, I don't know if I liked it, but they did go darker than most series because they pretty much had one of the main characters was raped in order to save everyone else. Because supplies are in such short demand, they needed tools to move the building that had collapsed, and they didn't really have anything to trade, so she literally traded her body to get the equipment, and the guy just, like, beat the crap out of her, too. I was just like, man. I mean, that was really rough, and that's...
That was... I agree, that was rough. Yeah. That was rough. I didn't complain about that part of the show. but the thing you're talking about the guy with the rubble, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I mean. I'm just like, and like you said, then why even do it? You know,
right.
Like, I mean, then don't put him in that situation to just make this false sense of like, oh, maybe he's going to die. But, you know, and speaking of it, it also, again, makes me think of Walking Dead because Walking Dead's a graphic novel, they can kill characters off. It doesn't really matter. I mean, except for hopefully what fits their story. And in Survivors, just like any other TV show, I think that as characters, you know, actors and audiences like certain characters, like you told me, True Blood, right? In the first season, didn't you say in the book there was a character they killed off? And in the second season, because we've all liked this particular performer, they didn't kill that character.
Right.
So you can have things like that can happen.
Right. And I do feel like somebody needs to die in the Survivor group, though I can't say who because I love them all, actually, at this point.
They need to thin the herd.
Well, that would mean they would need new characters, which they really don't have at the moment. I do like what's going on with the story with Abby, because I actually know how it ends and you don't. So I'm kind of excited on your behalf for the Abby storyline, because she got captured and she's held in that lab. And that actually ends up turning out really... That's a really good story.
No, I definitely think everyone should watch Survivors. I mean, I really like it. I was just saying my little beef with it. But no, it's good.
And how long did it take me to get you to watch Survivors in the first place?
Peter? A year. You gave it to me, and I sat on it forever. And then I finally... You know what it was? It was finally you telling me that I could get the files to work on my PlayStation. And then I finally was like, oh, I don't have to convert this. And then I watched them pretty fast.
Right.
The only reason I haven't watched the new episodes is because I've been really into Doctor Who coming back. That's all.
Okay, well, that, I guess, that's excusable. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this week for our shows that we're discussing. Do you guys have any final comments?
If you're a fan of Veronica Mars, I totally suggest watching Party Down. I think it's a fun show. It's on like Netflix Instant and everything, so it's really easy to access. You can watch it on your Xbox or PS3, probably watch it online. But it's basically a Starz show. It's half-hour sitcom. It's a catering service. It's got a lot of people from Veronica Mars, and every episode they'll have like guest stars and stuff, and it's pretty good. Like actually Sue Sylvester, Jane Lynch, is in the first season, I think, which is, you know, before now she's off because obviously she's on Glee. But it's a good show, and I've been telling Olivia you got to check it out. Like it's funny.
All right, Steve, you have any final comments?
No, I had a good time, and I'm gonna definitely be checking out more Justified. So if you guys want to end up talking about that later on, I think I'll be up on it.
All right, excellent. Well, I hope to see you, both of you guys back on one of my future podcasts. And if you guys out there in the audience have any comments, death threats, thoughts, whatever, send your comments to tvcampfire@gmail.com. All right.
Can you just ask for death threats?
Thanks. All right, thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.